As we look at these myth perceptions, we'll also be looking at the structures they perpetuate. Think of it this way. Just as our own beliefs manifest as things, the institutions spawned by these myths create structures in the forms of institutions and the systems and situations that those institutions create. So as the pendulum swung toward materialism, there was what we would call a changing of the gods. Just as surely as Descartes and Newton were focusing on the mechanics of matter in this world, religious expression became less otherworldly and more this-worldly. Particularly significant was the Protestant Reformation, and specifically the philosophy of John Calvin and the so-called Protestant ethic. Now, the theological discussion at the time centered around whether it was good works or good grace that paved the road to heaven. The Calvinists concluded that being saved was purely a matter of grace, and that nobody really knew who would be in that number. Well, I think this was probably hard for most people to swallow. And so they added the following qualification. Although we don't know for sure who is saved, if you're successful in this world, that has to be a sign that you're among that number. So the easy and convenient interpretation was go for success in this world, and if you succeed at becoming successful, that's a good indication that you're headed for heaven. So it's easy to see how that particular religious expression would go hand in hand with materialism. Now, of course, the money conversation didn't begin with the age of scientific materialism. As we'll find out very soon, there are repeating patterns in nature. Well, there were repeating patterns in human nature as well. And our dance with money is one of those cyclical, repeating stories. The short form of the story is this. Dating back to the days of Babylon, there have been two parallel tendencies regarding money. The first tendency was really begun by the priests in Babylon. Every spring, they would loan the farmers money to plant their crops. And when the crops were planted and it was time to pay back the priests, there was never enough money in circulation to actually pay them back. Consequently, within two or three generations, all of the farmers had lost their land and the land belonged to the priests. This lending racket has been repeated in just about every Western culture, and we could even see the reverberations today, for example, in the mortgage crisis that we've just been through. During times of loose money, money is loaned freely even to those who won't be able to pay it back. No problem. At the right time, we'll just tighten the money supply, call in the loans, and repossess whatever collateral is involved. What an idea! Meanwhile, there's been a parallel money story, and this was first characterized by the reforms of Solon in ancient Greece. And when he saw the money changers and the kind of things that were happening, people losing their land, losing their property, and essentially becoming slaves, he coined the first what is called fiat money, which is money that is not backed by any precious metal, but rather is simply represented as the value of the goods and services that are to be exchanged. So it's simply a money that is coined by the government. It's given a certain value, and people, simply by agreement, use this money. This was in order to prevent those who were able to capture and hoard precious metals from having too much power. So this struggle between money as a tool for magnifying personal wealth and money as a representation of actual value, this struggle was quite likely a cause of the American Revolution. Because of a shortage of precious metals in the colonies, the colonials issued something called colonial scrip. It was fiat money. The money came debt-free, and it accurately represented the real value of goods and services in that community. Consequently, there was full employment. Everybody was able to work, everybody was able to get what they needed, and it was a time of great prosperity. Well, unfortunately, Benjamin Franklin was visiting England, and he boasted about this. He said, look, we have such a great system. We don't owe money to anybody. It's debt-free. We have all this money. And within just a few years, the British Parliament passed the Currency Act in 1764 that made colonial scrip illegal and said that the British pound was the only coin of the realm. Consequently, the supply of money shrank, and the colonies were instantly plunged into depression. In his autobiography, Franklin claims that this was the real reason for the American Revolution. So consequently, at the time the Constitution was ratified, Thomas Jefferson and many of the other founders were very wary about banks, and they were adamant that only the government could issue money. Knowing the history of banking, he realized that debt was slavery. But remember, that moment in history where both spirit and material are in balance, that was a short-lived moment. So as the pendulum swung toward materialism, the power of money grew greater. In 1873, the U.S. went on the gold standard, meaning that the money supply was now tied to the supply of a precious metal, not the value of goods and services. By 1913, the Federal Reserve Act was passed, and the U.S. had the very national bank that Jefferson dreaded. Now, you might say, well, Federal Reserve, isn't that a federal company? Well, actually, it's as federal as Federal Express. It's a privately owned company that is owned by bankers. And President Woodrow Wilson signed the Federal Reserve Act into law. He was leveraged into doing that. The bankers who were advising him told him that this was the way to forestall any future depressions. But nevertheless, less than 10 years later, President Wilson wrote, and this is a sign of deep regret, I'm quoting his letter, "I have unwittingly ruined my country. We've come to be one of the worst ruled, one of the most completely controlled and dominated governments in the civilized world. No longer a government by free opinion, no longer a government by conviction and the vote of the majority, but a government by the opinion and duress of a small group of dominant men." Meanwhile, something else had occurred to further deify money and make the machine king. In 1886, corporations became persons. The first step to where we are today, where when it comes to government of the people, we the people are missing persons. 1886, that was the year when the Supreme Court declared that corporations enjoyed the protections of the 14th Amendment. Except that the court never actually declared that at all. What really happened was a former railroad president named J.C. Bancroft Davis, who happened to be serving as a court reporter during the case of Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad Company, wrote the headnotes. Now, the headnotes is simply a summary that's right in front of the case, supposedly summarizing the case. In the summary, he took the liberty to say that corporations were indeed under the protection of the 14th Amendment, even though the decision said nothing of the kind. Even though the decision didn't make that determination, future cases used it as a precedential standard so that they can continue to rule in that favor. So even though it never really was decided by the Supreme Court, it became precedent. So what that means is that non-living, money-making machines called corporations have been given all the rights of a human being with none of the spiritual burden of conscience. And that brings us where we are today, when, as David Corton says in his book title, corporations rule the world. So we have a situation, as we do now, where one multinational company, the Monsanto Corporation, has declared its intention to own all the seeds in the world. Talk about money changers in the temple of life. And yet, we've become so accustomed to money as God. People of the world haven't yet mustered the moral outrage to overturn their tables. Now we need to look at what really is possible by taking a look at what science has shown us to really be true about the primacy of matter.